You know, it's hard to believe, knowing that I have such a relationship with his brother Guy, that I don't think I've ever met Jay before, but it's so nice to have him in the studio. 43rd District, he is your state senator in his 15th year. Got a year before he runs again, and I'm sure he'll be there for many more years to come if he so chooses. Let's welcome State Senator Jay Costa to KDK. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Rob. Thanks for having me today.
It is really great to have you here. And before we go any further, I like to kind of give people, you know, the chance to get a little comfortable. I love your brother Guy. What's he up to now?
He's now working with the Allegheny County Parks Foundation, project manager for all the work that's being done at the Allegheny County Parks, and supervising all those activities.
Well, how is it that you've never showed up at the Seven Fishes broadcast, or Guy's never? I mean, you guys do such a great job with this whole Columbus Day parade thing, and I know that's near and dear to his heart, and your family roots and history must mean a lot to you, too.
Well, thank they do very much, and you talk about the Seven Fishes dinner. Guy gets all the limelight because that's his house we all converge on Christmas Eve, so that's
We need to come out to Coons Market for the broadcast. We'd love to
do that one of these days. Yeah, we'll do that.
Listen, we're going to get to a lot of politics in a moment, but you and I, 1957, it was a great year.
Yes, it was.
You got a couple of boys, a daughter, your wife, of course, Roxanne. You're a family guy, you know, kind of looking at your experience. You've done a little bit of everything, where you've gone to school, who you are. Where was it? Deputy sheriff, I register of wills, Indiana University, Duquesne, it just goes on and on and on. Ben Franklin Partnership, Board of Trustees, University of Pittsburgh, still there, Allegheny County Bar Association. Where was this thing that we call politics? Where did the bug bite you? When did it all start?
Well, I think we became interested, really around the dinner table at our home. Our father served as the Allegheny County treasurer in the early 80s and through the 80s until he passed away. Our family has always been involved, our extended family. My uncles and others have been involved in public service for a number of years. My mother served for about 25 years as a chairperson of the Department of Aging Advisory Board on Aging Matters, with Tom Forster used to call, a dollar less, a dollar volunteer, and put a lot of hours there. And it was just the whole notion of public service was something that our family, I think, always gravitated towards, starting with my father and my mom.
I love Tom Forster, and I got to tell you, early days at this wonderful station, he was a mountain of a man, and I'm not talking about his physique. His heart was as big as he was. And he is still missed to this day. But do you think there'll ever be another Tom Forster? That guy, if it needed to get done, that man got it done.
No, I don't think we'll see anyone of the likes of a Tom Forster. And he was involved in so many things that are still instrumental in the quality of life here today in Allegheny County, southwestern PA. You know, my background, I serve as the treasurer for the Community College of Allegheny County, and each of my brothers, five of us, all attended community college before we went on and gotten degrees at other schools.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and Tom Forster, along with Kay Leroy Irvis, were the two folks who were responsible for establishing a community college program here in Allegheny County. And it's an outstanding program that has launched so many careers for so many people over the past 30-some years. And then the Kane Hospital program we have in our county. The way in which we help our senior citizens, spend the last days of their lives. Tom Forster is one of those guys who's chiefly responsible for those two things in particular that help the quality of life here in this region, and it's somebody who I've had great fondness for and had the chance to work with in a very short period of time when I was Register of Wills. And just there's one of those guys that they won't be missed, and I don't think you'll see another one like him.
You know, my buddy Anthony Celeste from Coriopolis, who I dearly love, is running for mayor. And here's a guy who's been very successful. And, you know, I've said to him many times, why do you want to get into this craziness? And small-town politics can even be worse than state politics. But there are some people that just have a passion that they want to make a difference. And the thing that I've learned, you know, throughout all of the pay raise stuff that went on in Harrisburg and the times that I've spent with people like Jerry Laval, who I love, my neighbor right across the street in Rochester, who, you know, had a great service record as a Marine, teacher, football coach, boxer, mayor of Rochester, county commissioner, state senator, term after term, never anybody ran against him because he was so beloved. Some trouble that obviously, as many of us go through in life, the ups and downs. You have to love what you do to put yourself out there every day. Am I right?
Oh, you have to. And you have to want to be able to work with folks and do better and help your community do better. You want to serve the public in a way that, I have other opportunities and other choices I could make. I could practice law or I can do a variety of other things. But Public service is something, as I said earlier, it's part that's something that I grew up with and something I truly enjoy doing. And it's nice to be able to do a variety of things, facilitate community activities, facilitate meetings. Somebody comes in our office with a state problem. To us, it may be something that's routine for that particular day, but to them, it's a major issue and it needs to be resolved. And to be able to work with folks and help navigate through, whether it be a state or federal or local issue, that's something that's very rewarding, and I enjoy doing that.
We're going to get to some hard-hitting stuff right after the break, but a few more to get to know each other kind of things as well, too, because I really respect what these people do every day. And as I've said it before, in the last few years, I've realized more and more, it ain't about the pay. It ain't about the perks. It's about making a difference. And spending time in offices of various state representatives during the day, the battle zone and what the phones are ringing about as far as maybe even just getting a license renewal. These people put forth a gallant effort every single day because people matter, and they matter because they care about the people that are in their districts. That and much more when we get back with State Senator Jay Costa in a couple of minutes on The Rob Pratt Show, 617 and 63 degrees.
KDKA is your station for severe weather information. We're the voice of Pittsburgh. News Radio 1020, KDKA. The Rob Pratt Show, News Radio 1020, KDKA.
All right, Jay Costa here. Time to get back at it. You know, this whole blended gasoline thing, EPA says, no. And they're not saying they're definitely not going to do it, but at least not right now. So that means, here we go again. Now the EPA can't even help us out. The price of gasoline is going to go up. You're a family guy. People want to get out this summer, do things with their family. You know, even coming into work, and I'll be honest with you, I never thought about putting gasoline in my car. I just went and filled up. I never looked at the price. I could care less. But even I, yes, Rob Pratt, I'm saying $40 a day is getting a little bit too much. How are we going to stop this madness?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know how we stop it. I think the issue with the EPA, we've been appealing to them to try working through our DEP at the Pennsylvania DEP, trying to get those guys to recognize that the shortage is here and that we need to take steps to address it with this summer blend. Now we're at a point where they're telling us, whether it happens or not, that we'll be able to be replenished with some of the new gasoline that's supposed to be trucked here or be here soon. We hope that that'll help address the shortfall that takes place. But the overall price of gasoline, I think, you know, what we have to do is what a number of us have been talking about for years. You need to wean ourselves off of the reliance upon foreign fuels. And I think that's what we have to try to do to be able to get to a position where we do things differently. I mean, we need to do more, you know, gas-powered cars, more electric cars, more hybrids, that kind of stuff, I think, is the only way we're going to be able to maintain some of that.
I don't think people realize how important it is on the state level, because people think issues like that are all Washington. They think it's a job for Bob Casey or for Jason Altmaier or Tim Murphy. But in reality, you guys are on the pitcher's mound. You've got the ball in your hand. They need your help to get these things done, don't they?
There's no question. We need to partner with them, and we provide programs to assist or help actually implement some of the programs that come from the federal level to allow us to do some of those things. You know, what we do as a state with respect to the regulations that take place, for example, when we did stuff with when we tied ourselves to a variety of other state standards that allowed us the opportunity to begin to look at how we deal with some of our cars in terms of some of the chemicals and to come out of the vehicles through the emissions and the like. Those are steps that we can take to help address what needs to be done. But at the end of the day, they're working through DEP and EPA. They need to work closely together. They do. But a lot of the implementation of some of the programs that come down from the feds are something the responsibility of the state.
Young guy, good family guy. Your cost is, I don't know, you're all Dorian Gray. We're the same age. And you look a hell of a lot younger than I do. My question is, you ever thought about the governor's mansion? And I'll tell you why. Because you got to feel sometimes, boy, my hands are tied and I'm so tired of being tied up. I want to make a difference, but every time, and now I've got this Republican governor who's got all these cuts on the table, and I don't think he understands, and I wish he would understand. Maybe I'd be better off being governor. Our good buddy Dan Onorato made a run, didn't work out. I love Tom Corbett. Great guy, and I wish him the best going under the knife tomorrow. My good buddy, Dr. Patrick DeMeo, and of course, Dr. Mark Vi, they'll do a great job, and Tommy will be back. He's a fighter. But have you ever thought about running for the governor's mansion?
I'm very happy with what I'm doing right now. I'm having the privilege of being the Democratic leader, serving as a Democratic leader in the state Senate. It's a pretty awesome responsibility. I think I want to stay there for a little while and continue to do that and be able to be the voice for our Democrats across this Commonwealth and raise the issues, the ideals and the values that are very important to Democratic voters and other voters in this region and in this Commonwealth. So I like what I'm doing. I want to stay there for a little while. And it's interesting, though. I have a lot of opportunities to help shape policy in this Commonwealth, and I think that's something interesting as well.
Let me ask you this. How do you keep your feet on the ground? Because there's been some guys that have been pretty powerful, Mike Vion being one, and we all know what happened there. Bill DeWeese, what he's going through, my good friend Jerry Laval. Mm-hmm. Not here to cast stones, but how quickly you can fall in politics. How do you keep it in perspective? And here's something else. Who do you trust?
Well, that's always a good question. Who do you trust? I think you work and learn to build relationships with folks, and then you begin to build trust, and you gauge people and you judge people, and you hope you make the right judgment call. With respect to being grounded, I think it all goes back to your upbringing, whether you've been taught and bred to be somebody who's truthful and honest and works hard. And as long as you do that, and then in terms of keeping me in my place. My wife does a very good job of reminding me.
I got the trash.
That's it. So I've been very fortunate in that regard. My family's been a tremendous asset and tremendous supporter of my efforts. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be a Democratic leader. I've been able to serve in the Senate for 15 years without their tremendous support from my wife and my kids and my extended family.
Does a six-year term help? I mean, I look at some of these guys and gals, 4 years, I'm sorry, these guys and gals that are out there, and they're dealing with these two-year terms. How do they get anything done? I'm thinking, of course, of the Pennsylvania Senate as opposed to the state Senate. Mm-hmm. But 4 years is still awfully difficult to turn things around, but 2 years is almost impossible.
2 years is tough, and you see it every other year. They're running for office, and they're even gearing up to run for office for the next year as we speak here today. Once we get through this election and get towards this Labor Day, you're going to start seeing congressional members and also House of Representatives and the folks starting to begin to gear up and doing things. The problem that it creates, I think, governmentally, is that it ties the hands of people who are reluctant to make difficult decisions that need to be made at certain times. Elections coming up, whether it be a primary or a general election, so you're reluctant to cast votes or take positions that otherwise that you might be able to do if you had the benefit of a four-year term. So you're afraid to take the vote, the issue gets pushed back or pushed off for a while, and then before you know it, you don't get to it, and then the next cycle turns around, and so it creates a situation where we're not able to address important issues. One of those issues is transportation in this Commonwealth.
Oh, it's Port Authority, man.
It's Port Authority, it's our roads, it's our bridges, but everyone's afraid to cast votes that would generate the revenue to address these issues. And the problem becomes the closer you get to a reelection, folks are less likely to vote for it, and then it gets pushed back further.
Next week on this broadcast, 7 o'clock hour, my dear friend, a man who did very well in the IT world, came back home to Eastern Ohio, put literally millions of dollars back into his hometown, you know, building a company, an IT company, starting a school, actually housing the local Christian school. I mean, did so much good, supported a television show that we did together talking about the issues. And here was a guy who did nothing but email when he talked to you. We could be across the table and he would email. That's what he did. But he learned to communicate via television with a little help from me. But he's a whole lot smarter, and he decides to become a state representative in District 1, and he wins. He's a Republican. Mm-hmm. He's got a stance, and he's, in my opinion, the Abe Lincoln of his generation. The guy is just, he just believes in politics the way it was meant to be, the Constitution and all of that stuff. He'll be here next week. But I've been visiting various parishes that I haven't seen in a while in Eastern Ohio, and I've gone back to these places, Jay, and I see the streets are deplorable. Businesses are shut down. Buildings are boarded up. Same thing that I see in the Mon Valley, the Beaver Valley, Rochester. There's a new hub thanks to the Beaver County Transit Authority going in. But other than that, you got a pizza shop and maybe a bank, and that's about it, and the great DiAgardi family. Other than them, there's not much going on even in Rochester. The whole idea that you guys and gals need to do is to create jobs. And I know everybody's putting a lot of stock in Marcellus Shale. But other than them, is there anything on the horizon? Can you give us any hope? Manufacturing jobs, so we'll get a tax base that we can repair some of these streets and get new bridges and be able to move forward. Because right now, I got to be honest with you, looking at this country, the panhandle of West Virginia, Eastern Ohio, and Western Pennsylvania, it looks a little bleak right now.
Rob, I would tell you that is the number one issue that we learned throughout this Commonwealth that people are talking about. Senate Democrats have put together a program called PA Works. It's a program that's really geared towards strictly geared towards job creation and job retention. We recognize, we rolled this out in February. It's a six-point plan that addresses a lot of those type of things you just talked about. You know, making investments, though. You talk about those communities, whether they be local cities or small towns. We need to continue to make investments along those lines in programs that work, smart programs. We need to merge programs together to drive out resources to allow for community and economic development. Those are the type of things. We also talk about really developing industries. You know, Pennsylvania is poised to be a world leader in terms of how we deal with the clean and green environment and the clean and green industry. We've got wind, solar, nuclear. We have the gas. I mean, we have a whole, you know, coal.
So let me ask you this as we go to break. Do you think that maybe within my children's lifetime, we could be not the Silicon Valley, but maybe the George Westinghouse Valley again? Could we be that much of a dominant force on the national stage within the next 20 years, do you think?
I think in the area of energy, yes, if we make the appropriate investments.
All right, good stuff. Senator Jay Costa is here, 628 and 63 degrees.
Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible.
Osama bin Laden is dead, and across America, there is much rejoicing.
After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
Since the celebration here at Ground Zero, people are smiling. People seem happy.
Because of who we are, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Voice of Pittsburgh, News Radio 1020 KDKA. The Rob Pratt Show, News Radio 1020 KDKA.
Back on the Rob Pratt Show. Good morning, Pittsburgh. It is 6:36 right now, 65 degrees. State Senator Jay Costa is here. Jay, I got to get back to these jobs, and I don't mean to hold your feet to the fire, but we these Marcellus Shale jobs, we've been talking about it and hearing about it, and you keep hearing Texas license plates, and, you know, when are we going to get money for them drilling? When do you see this stuff starting to turn around, if ever, and what is it going to take? Rich Fitzgerald was in here the other day in the whole letter issue. You know, Marty was taking him to task on that. It's gone on long enough. We've got Tom Ridge, a great American, Homeland Security, ex-governor from Erie, great service record, did just about everything positive and right a person can do. He's out there. He's a spokesman making a nice piece of change for being that spokesperson. God bless him. More power to him. That's capitalism at its best. But when are we finally going to start to see residuals for the citizens of Pennsylvania, do you think?
My hope is that you will see a Marcellus Shale tax or extraction tax or even a local fee imposed as part of our budget process where we're going through right now. We believe that there's sufficient support, at least in the Senate, to be able to do something along those lines. We hope that it'll be something that's done sooner than later. The governor is not interested in doing something, so we have to convince him that it's the right thing to do, and we believe it is the right thing to do, particularly as it relates to the impact in the local community. Mm-hmm. There's significant impact in the local community. There's a tremendous impact in the environmental community. We need to take steps to protect both of those and drive those resources. Whatever we collect, those two areas need to be reimbursed or dollars need to be driven out to the environmental community to allow for things like regulating, policing, you know, monitoring, testing, all that kind of stuff, testing the air quality, testing water quality, all that. We need resources and individuals to do that, and that's where that revenue would come from. I think the industry recognizes they need to be part of the solution. They're ready to be part of the solution, but I just don't think that the governor and our House Republican colleagues, quite frankly, are ready to do that, and that's something we have to continue to work on. I also believe that we have a lot of work to do along the lines of the job side you made reference to. And oftentimes people talk about the Texas and Oklahoma license plates that are here, and they are here, but they're here in a very limited way. And
folks, is it changing?
It is changing, and I think steps have been taken. We've had a number of meetings with labor leaders. We've had a number of meetings with Marcellus industry companies to make sure that they integrate into their workforce Pennsylvania residents, and they've been doing that, and that's taking place, particularly as it relates to the well site. But a lot of folks don't recognize is that the benefit of the Marcellus industry is not just the gas part of it, but it's also the work that is being done and the companies that are being employed sort of in this chain as it relates to getting the gas to market. You know, when
some of the tool and die work, all that other stuff.
Absolutely, the tool and die stuff, the truck drivers, the guys driving the water trucks, the guys at the U.S. Steel that are working, because U.S. Steel gets major piping contracts, multi-million-dollar contracts. Those folks are all working, and it's just, you know, you don't like to talk about trickle-down economics, but clearly clearly this is an example where there are a number of people in the Marcellus Shale chain that are benefiting from the activity, and those are, for the most part, all Pennsylvania residents, Pennsylvania companies that are benefiting along those lines.
One of my favorite papers, and I love all the local papers out there, and I try to read as many of them online as I can, but the East Liverpool Review, Ohio, owned by the Nutting family, of course, Pittsburgh Pirates, they posed a question, should parts of Thompson Park, which was given to that city by a pottery family many, many years ago, start using some of that acreage to drill? This is not a large park. Even some of the larger state parks, I have to question that. I simply don't want that to happen. So there's got to be a line in the sand. I mean, some of these farmers obviously need it because they want to hang on to their farms because, let's face it, agriculture has changed. But don't you think that we just should leave certain places should be hollow ground, if you will, in my opinion?
And I agree. I think we made that point very clear over the course of the last couple of years. Particularly, to me, neighborhood drilling should be off the table. There should be no question we should not be doing any neighborhood drilling.
I don't want a cyclone, even though I tease and I might be better off, but I don't want a 20-foot cyclone fence around my house.
There's no question. And that's what you end up with a lot of times. I mean, I've been to a number of Marcellus drilling sites and any other parts of the whole process. And I would tell you, you end up with cyclone fences around buildings. And it needs to be managed. It needs to be done properly. And that's where the zoning regulations come into play. And what's troublesome about not imposing a Marcellus Shale extraction tax or an impact fee is that we're not able to get to these other issues that are equally important as well. Things like zoning, things like this concept of force pooling, things like zoning or well spacing, whole host of other issues that are very, very important to the industry when they want to come and make an investment, but also equally important to the people who live in this Commonwealth, to know exactly what the laws are relative to those type of issues. Until we get a Marcellus Shale extraction tax or get that issue resolved, we're not going to get to those other issues, and that's frustrating. There are a lot of environmental concerns, a lot of environmental issues that have to be addressed. We simply can't get to them because we're not finished.
But here's the thing. We can get a drink tax, but we can't get a Marcellus Shale tax. And, you know, our buddy Dan Honorato got beat up over that. And shame on a lot of people because I don't think they understand what he had to do to save Allegheny County. Because when he came in, Mr. Roddy did a great job. Mm-hmm. But obviously when Dan came, things were a lot worse than people realized. People were moving out of here in droves, heading to Butler and Beaver. A lot of people are still in that Allegheny County today because of Dan. But what I'm starting to think, and Raja, I love hearing him talk, rich, energetic, great businessman. Mark Flaherty, his uncle Pete Flaherty, meant so much to me, and I could just go on and on about him, too. I'm just starting to wonder, and I'm looking at Luke, and I'm still working on Luke, trying to get Luke up here, and we made another request the other day. Like the kid, I still think he needs to press the flesh a little bit more, get out there and meet the people, but that's okay. But I'm starting to think, and you got names like Jack Wagner floating around out there, that this Allegheny County chief executive job might not be as important as it once was, and it may all go back on who's the next mayor. That may be even a bigger job. I don't see the city and the county merging. We got a lot of things happening locally here in politics that are just as confusing, if not more so, than what's happening in Harrisburg. How do you guys and gals get together to kind of put us all on some common ground here?
Well, we've had a great working relationship with Dan Honorato the past 8 years. I mean, Dan was very involved.
Yeah, but he's leaving soon.
I understand he's leaving, but Rich Fitzgerald, quite frankly, has also been together with Dan and others working to make sure that issues that are taking place at the state level and how they're impacted, how they impact the county at the county level as well. I will tell you, when the governor gave his budget address on March 8th, he wasn't finished for 15 minutes, and Rich Fitzgerald was on the phone asking me to send him a copy of the budget and talking points so he could understand what the impact was going to be on the county. We need to have those relationships to take place, whether it's Rich or Flaherty, whoever it's going to be. That's essential as we go forward.
Look, I've said this. Marty Griffin would be a great defense attorney. He can rattle anyone, believe me, and I was watching him work the other day. He's a master at what he does. Rich, though, he's a lot like me. He fires from the hip. The guy's very passionate, and he doesn't need, this is not his real job. He does it, and he makes it a real job because he's passionate. Got 8 kids, got a business that he created from ground zero, got a good man in Mark Flaherty, Raja and all that. But as far as Rich Fitzgerald, I think he's misunderstood a little bit. Some things come out of his mouth because he's speaking from the heart, and sometimes, As we all do, we engage our mouth before our brains. But I think Rich Fitzgerald really cares about Allegheny County, and I think he has a lot of the same ideas as Dan Onorato does. He just needs to step back, as I do sometime, and think things through a little bit better.
Rich is a good man. As you indicated, he's a great family man, but he's also a man, again, who's made a decision that he wants to be involved in public service and does an outstanding job working along those lines and very much interested and very much concerned about what Pennsylvania is going to look like, southwestern Pennsylvania, what Allegheny County is going to look like, what role we're going to play in this Commonwealth. I'm excited about what he brings. He reminds me in a lot of ways of the passion that he has, similar to what Dan Onorato has. And as you say, he needs to continue to work with folks. And that's one of the unique things about Rich that I think is important. He's developed working relationships over the past 10 or so years with local officials, but also with state-level officials as well, well-respected, well-regarded. And I think if he...
So do you support Rich Fitzgerald? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, I do support Rich Fitzgerald.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen... If Bob O'Connor lives, and I know it's a big if, I mean, every time I see a shamrock, every time I see the color green, I don't care if it's on someone's tie or the grass that someone's mowing, I think of my Irishman, my friend, Bob O'Connor, who I loved and will always love. If he lives, is the playing field altogether different, do you think?
I think it is a little bit different. I think there would have been the continuity of Bob being there. You mentioned, you know, his son Corey's a great kid.
He's running. On his way.
I was riding through the, you know, Greenfield's one of our communities. I'm riding through Greenfield and
good for
the,
him.
You know, saw the O'Connor signs and I hearken back to the days.
I'm telling
Bob,
you, I love it.
When Bob won his county city council endorsement by one vote, I was thinking back to that. But in any event, I think it would have been a little bit different because Bob had generated a lot of excitement about the city of Pittsburgh and folks, and he was a neighborhood regular guy. Folks connected to him, and I think he had a lot of qualities that I think that Dick Caligiuri had when he was mayor, that people liked and respected them, and they could pull people along, and they could bring people with you when you're a leader.
Let me tell you this quick story, and I hope Joe Mystic doesn't mind, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I'll pull a Rich Fitzgerald. I'm just going to let it fly. When he was sick and was diagnosed with this horrible disease, he would actually wrap himself in a blanket and sit on the couch in his office just to give extra time to Sophie and others who were going to follow in his footsteps, because he wanted to leave this city better, a better place when he left, not just the city, but this earth. And how do you find a better human being on the planet than the late Richard Caligiuri? And that statue, if more so than anyone, is well-deserved.
There's no question.
It's what Pittsburgh's talking about.
It's all about talk.
It's the Rob Pratt Show.
Comes highly recommended. You're going to feel better if you talk to him.
News Radio 1020, KDKA.
All right, what else can I get to here with State Senator Jay Costa before we say goodbye? And we're going to have to do this more often. Why'd your brother not run for mayor?
He enjoys what he's doing now.
But did he think about it?
He enjoys what he's doing now, Rob.
Well, I got to tell you, I really thought he was going to make a run at it. What do you think needs to be done as far as the state and the city of Pittsburgh? I mean, Philadelphia has always been in the news because, obviously, of Ed Rendell. Now we've got the guy from Shaler, Tom Corbett, who I do wish nothing but the best and a speedy recovery after his back surgery tomorrow, and he will be fine. He's a tough guy. But it just seems like we're always the second-class citizen when it comes to the state. What do we do to get our name out there more and to become more state known than we are right now? Or do you think it's already happening?
It's already happening, Rob. I think with the election of Governor Corbett, I think clearly that was something that was very important. We hadn't had a Western Pennsylvania governor for a long time.
And people need to remember that, too. Yeah. He's one of us.
Yeah, he's from Allegheny County. He's one of us. Grew up in one of our communities for a number of years. But more important, and I think in addition to that, is that for the first time we've ever, we've had leaders in both in the House and the Senate from Allegheny County. I have the honor of serving as a Democratic leader. Representative Frank Dermody is the House Democratic, or House Minority Leader as well, along with Mike Terzai, who's the Majority Leader. And I think I say that. And then you've got Sam Smith, who's the Speaker from Punxsutawney area. So you've got a heavy concentration of leaders who are working collectively on a variety of issues that are now have Western Pennsylvania in mind more so than what we had in years past, when, quite frankly, all those leadership positions I just referenced were all held by folks from the southeastern part of the state. So the whole dynamic has changed in terms of where the leadership conversation are taking place. why that's important is now when you begin to craft policy issues or when you begin to craft budget issues, you know, there are a handful of folks around a table. And as I said before, the folks making those decisions, having input along those lines, were from the other part of the state. Now they're all from the western part of the state. And I think that goes a long way in helping us position ourselves to be recognized and regarded as a region that's up and coming. And then when you couple that with work that's being done at the Allegheny Conference, for example, and the Pittsburgh Chamber of Commerce and a whole other folks, the industries that are here, well, if we can all work together to be able to work to make investments and establish programs that are successful that help put people back to work, I think that's how we're going to be known.
All right. We got public education cuts, health care cuts, big cuts.
Yeah.
How many of these cuts actually survive, do you think?
I think you're going to see
There's cuts. No way all of these cuts are going to happen.
That's correct. There's no way all these cuts are going to happen to the same degree or the same depth that we're talking about now. We will continue to work to restore dollars we believe need to be placed into education and also into workforce and job creation programs. We think those are the two principal areas we need to put dollars back in, and I think we're getting there. The issue is really whether or not we're going to spend more than the $27.3 that the governor's talked about, $27.3 billion. That was his original budget proposal back in March. Since that time, our surplus has grown from $78 million that he thought it was going to be to $506 million, likely to go to $700 million between now and June 30th. We believe that we don't spend all of it. We think that we should spend a portion of it, maybe 40 or 50% of that additional $450 million surplus that we're going to have, use some of that and drive it back into the budget to particularly in the areas of education, particularly programs, one program in particular called the Accountability Block Grant Program. That program funds about, through the 500 school districts across this Commonwealth, 66% of them take those dollars and put them into early learning programs. Pre-K, you know, 3 to 5 year olds going to preschool, full day kindergarten, those type of programs, teacher training, smaller class sizes, very effective programs that school districts can choose to use those dollars. Those are where we need to put those dollars.
I have great respect for teachers. PSEA, we had Butch Santacola in. I love people that give their life to teaching others. But there's got to be a way. My buddy Nick Trombetta, what he's done with that cyber school is unbelievable. Can't you have some sort of a conference where you get that type of public school and the traditional bricks and mortar public school together to find a way so they can share the wealth a little bit and take some of the burden off the taxpayers? Can't you just figure something out to bring the two together? Because I still think in the back of my mind, and I'm not as smart as you, Jay, but there's got to be a way to make it work.
There is a way to make it work.
And consolidation? I don't know.
Those are all things that are being discussed, quite frankly. You have a number of school districts that voluntarily are looking at consolidating. But I think the investments, and we need to work together, Rob, in terms of working on charter schools, cyber schools.
They're here to stay. They're not leaving.
Exactly right. They're not going anywhere, nor should they go anywhere. I think they play a valuable role. They provide the competition. They provide the other options that parents may want for their children, which I think is good. But the programs that I made reference to, it's not necessarily about the teachers and the like, but more importantly, it's about the kids, getting the kids the proper foundation to get started. Our early learning programs are exceptional in this Commonwealth, some of the best in the country. And to lose dollars in that program simply because we're putting an artificial cap on how much we want to spend.
To me, short-sighted. Here's what frightens me. You were talking about your Little League days off the air and how important that was to you. Randy Cosgrove, Athletic Director Ambridge, has been here. I read in the paper that even Beaver, the county seed, their school, they're talking about pay for play, cutting sports. Look, moms and dads, as we had them, they're good today. They're wonderful. 99.75% of them are wonderful, but it ain't the same. This is not 1967 anymore. Mom ain't waiting home to make you a little rigatoni. You understand what I'm saying here? It's a different ball game. Now you're going to leave these kids off the ball field and out wandering the streets for a couple of more hours. That's suicide. I mean, you can't stop athletics.
It's athletics, but also it's the arts. It's all those programs.
Extracurricular, right.
All those community activities or school activities are so essential. And to when you start to price them out of kids' reach, those kids aren't going to get engaged. And you talk
kids
about,
shouldn't have to pay even $50 to play football. Come on.
I'm troubled by it. I think that, you know, there needs to be something they can
and
do.
And bands are disappearing. Come on.
Yeah, maybe the kids do some type of other type of community work or work in the school to offset whatever their cost might be. But at the end of the day,
that's a good point.
Yeah, the kids have to be able to be involved and be engaged in extracurricular activity. And whether it's playing baseball, football, soccer, whatever, lacrosse,
school play, hockey, band.
School play, band, all that stuff is so critically important in the development of a kid. That we need to make investments. We need to make sure the proper resources are going to be there. But I will tell you, Rob, at the budget, the way it's structured right now, those are going to be the programs that are going to go away because schools aren't going to be able to impose, I believe, these fees to these kids, and those kids aren't going to be able to pay. And quite frankly, it's disproportionately impacts poorer kids and poorer school districts who are in that position. And those are always factors we need to look at as well.
Well, you know, I'm a entrepreneur. I'm a hustler. I'm a guy from the streets, okay? And I'd love to get Jim Furlow and the governor in a room, pay-per-view, and debate Marcellus Shale and all the... Jimmy is so articulate, as is Tom, and I think that would be great radio. But let's be honest, and that'll probably never happen, but let's be honest as well. I don't even think the governor, down deep, does he believe that he's going to be able to get away with all these cuts? I mean, he has to understand this is going to go on, this fight's going to go on for a long time, because this would be political suicide if this happens.
Yeah, I think he recognizes that he needs to use a portion of the state surplus that we have that's growing far greater. It's five times larger than what he thought it was going to be on June 30th. I think he's coming around to the point where he realizes that some of these cuts can be reduced, the depth of the cuts can be reduced by using part of the surplus and saving part of it for next year and the year after. I think that's what we need to do, in my opinion. But it requires him to get off this pledge that he's only going to spend X number of dollars when we've got, you know, everyone says we need to spend what we've got coming in. The fact of the matter is we have $500 million more coming in than what the governor wants to spend at this point in time, and I think what we need to do is take a piece of that extra money, spend it this year, but also save a large piece for next year and the following year.
But the one thing you have to give him, and that's credit for standing on what he believes. He said he was going to make some tough decisions, and boy, he didn't waste much time. He threw a haymaker, I mean, right after he got the oath of office. So for that, I commend him, but the battle definitely is far from over. Jay, I can't thank you enough, and I have such great respect for your family and what all you do in government, and please feel free to come back anytime.
I'll be happy to do so. Thanks for having me today.
Puts on his robe and goes to work on the bench. Every day, Judge Mike Marmo listens to both sides and has the experience we need in the Allegheny County Court of Common Pleas. Every day, Judge Mike Marmo hears the tough cases and makes fair decisions. Judge Marmo is recommended by the Bar Association and endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police. The choice is clear. Vote for the only candidate with experience as a judge. Keep Judge Mike Marmo.
Paid for by the committee to keep Judge Mike Marmo.
I want to stay at home. It's my castle. I can't get around the way I used to.
Maria's part of the UPMC Living at Home program, a community service that helps people like Maria stay right where they want to be.
I go to the doctors, but most of the time, help comes to me. I don't have to worry about living alone. I feel free.
UPMC, changing lives every day. Go to upmc.com/community.
Survivor Sunday kicks off with a season finale. Who will be the ultimate survivor?
There's nothing that's gonna stop me.
Then don't miss the live reunion show, CBS Tonight.
You're locked into the Rob Pratt Show. It's what Pittsburgh's talking about. News Radio 1020 KDKA.
One of the good guys in Harrisburg, State Senator Jay Costa. Look, you can argue all you want, whether you like him or not, Democrat, Republican, whether you want a Dan in there, your happy Tom's in there. Would you really want that job or any of those jobs? I mean, that's tough work. It is. And I know what you're saying. Well, look what they get. Well, you know what? Yeah, they get a lot of grief. And to get up this early in the morning and for Jay to come in, I'm very grateful for that. But as I said, we all need to remember this ain't 1967 and your mom's not waiting with rigatoni when you get home from school. I think that makes sense, right? That puts it in its proper place. Stay tuned. News at 7 next. 65 degrees. Big news for Doug and Jess. I'll tell you all about it in minutes.
KDKA AM and HD. KDKA FM HD3 Pittsburgh. And KDKA...